We're at Perek Beis, Pasuk Yutet. Bathsheba is about, does enter actually the King Shlomo's room, and she's about to make her request on behalf of Adoniyahu to marry Avishag, not realizing that this is a conspiracy on the part of Adoniyahu to gain control of the throne. But as she enters, the Pasuk tells us that the Melech, Vayakam HaMelech Likrasa, the king got up to meet her, Vayishtachul and bowed to her, Vayeshev HaKisa, and sat on his throne. And the question is raised, can a king do this? Obviously, the answer is yes, because Shlomo did it. But I guess more accurately, the question is, why is a king allowed to do this? Melech Shemach LaKavodo and Kavodo Mach, a king has to watch out for his honor. So what? On what basis can a king bow to his mother? Now there's a Gemara in Makkos, Dav Chav Dalet, that tells us that HaMelech Yehoshaphat used to be Mechabe Talmidei Chachamim. And whenever he saw a Talmid Chacham, he would run to him, bow to him, hug him, call him all kinds of names, Adoni, Alufi, very Bekovedic names. The Marsha on that Gemara says that although a Melech Shemachal HaKavodo and Kavodo Machal, a king cannot forgive his kavod, but when it comes to a Talmud Chacham or to a father, that's okay. That's what the Marsha says. He doesn't cite any sources, he doesn't give any reasoning, but he makes this statement. There is an Aruch Lener. Aruch Lener is a Achron who is perhaps not that famous unless you've learned the Masechtos that he wrote on. But he had a Talmud who was perhaps more famous than him, I would say, which is Rosham Shnufal Hirsch. He was Rosham Shnufal Hirsch's Rebbe. So the Aruch Lener asks the question and says, look, the Gemara isn't talking about a father. The Gemara is talking about a Talmud Chacham. And there's a big difference. Being Mechabed a Talmud Chacham is like being Mechabed the Shechina. Obviously, a Melech is obligated to give honor to the Shechina, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But who says the same thing applies to a father? Mm-hmm. Now, the truth be told, that being mechabed a parent is also compared to being mechabed the Shechina, but it's not quite the same. How do we know it's not the same? It's not the same as being mechabed a Talmud Chacham. How do we know that? Because there is a famous Gemara. The Gemara says that, I think it was Rabbi Tarfon, I'm not sure, but one of the Tanoim was darshaning all the S. Every time it says S in the Torah, that it's a ribui. It comes to add something. And therefore, every time you find the word S, he made a drasha. When he got to the pasuk, S Hashem Elokecha Tira, he said, can't be. How could you add something to the mitzvah of Yiras Hashem? What could be compared to the mitzvah of Yiras Hashem that is passed, that is appropriate to be said in the same pasuk? Therefore, he said, "Kishem shes kibalt ischara drisha kakibalt ischara drisha," that he withdrew all his drushes. He says, "Ad shabar Rabbi Akiva." Rabbi Akiva came along and said, "No, it is proper to darshan es." And what does es Hashem elekechatira mean? Es l'rabos talmidei chachamim. The fear that you have for a talmid chacham is equivalent, more some degree, at least close enough, that it can be mentioned in the pasuk Es Hashem Elokecha Tira. But he did not say Es L'Rabos Avicha V'Imecha. So it would appear that the Aruch Lener has a good point, that there is a distinction between the kavod of a Talmid Chacham, which is considered to be directly the kavod of Shechina, or the kavod of a parent, which is also somewhat like kavod HaShechina, but not to the same extent of a Talmid Chacham. So what right did the Marsha have to lump the two together, and how did he assume that the same thing would apply to a father? So a number of Achronim defend the Marsha, or defend the concept. They don't necessarily all quote the Marsha. One of them is the Kli Yakar on the Navi, and they say as follows, that there isn't really a question here of a conflict. It's not a question which is more important, the kavod of the Melech or the kavod of your parents. But when a Melech is mechabed his parents, that does not detract from the kavod of the Melech, it enhances it. The true nature of kavod is not to be high and mighty, and not obviously a king does have certain trappings, and he does have to, in a certain sense, be a little bit high and mighty, because he has a position that has to command awe and respect and so on. But if a melech shows that he is a mensch, that he is a tzaddik, that he recognizes his indebtedness to his parents, it doesn't reduce his kavod in the eyes of the people, it enhances his kavod in the eyes of the people. So you shouldn't look at this as a conflict. The kavod of the father overwhelms the kavod of the melech. It's compatible. By doing such a thing, you're actually increasing the kavod of the melech. So therefore, it's not an issue of melech shem machol al kavod. It has nothing to do with machol al kavod. If a melech were to defer to somebody else of an inferior stature because of his position, for example, if there would be some kind of a mayor of the city, so the reason why you're mechabed the mayor is because of his position of authority. Well, a melech has a larger position of authority, so for him to defer to the mayor would be machol al kavodah. That would be inappropriate. He's not allowed to do that. But he's not being mechabed his parents because of the position of authority. It's because of all the hakaras hatov that he owes him, because he's supposed to understand every generation is following the generation before them, and that's a link to the Mesorah and many other reasons. And therefore, it's not a conflict with his role as a melech, and on the quite contrary, if anything, it enhances his kavod. In general, we need to realize that the definition of kavod follows the Torah. And if we make up artificial kibudim, in the long run, they're worthless. All right, the end of the pasuk states that Vayeshev al kiso, he sat on his throne, Vayosem kisel em ha-melech, and he placed the throne or chair for the mother of the king, Vateshev l'imino, and she sat to his right hand side. So Chazal Darshan, Eim HaMelech does not refer to Bathsheba, who was Shlomo's mother, but it refers to his great-great-grandmother, I don't know exactly how many greats, we'll count them later, Rus. Rus HaMoaviah was still alive, and she was given a seat of honor to the right-hand side of the king. Where did the Chazal get that? How do they know? So, again, the Kli Yakar explains that the diuk of Chazal comes from the fact of the sequence in the pasuk. What did Shlomo Melech do? He got up and bowed to his mother. Why? To give her kavod. Then what did he do? He sat down on his throne while she's still standing around, and then he gets, okay guys, let's bring in a chair for my mother. That's not kavod. If he wants to bring in a chair for his mother, first he should bring in the chair for his mother, let her sit down, and then he sits down. Therefore, Chazal were medayek that of course that's what he did. He brought in a chair for his mother, and she sat down, and then Ruth walked in. But this was after he was already seated, so as soon as Ruth walked in, he said, bring in another chair. We want a seat for Ruth. How old was Ruth? So I don't know exactly, but I did a little research. And I figured out as follows. There is a Medrash Rabba in Rus that says that Rus was 40 years old when she married Machlon, whoever it was, I think it was Machlon. 40 years old when she married. Now, I don't know how long the sequence of events in Sefer Rus is. You know, she married, he died, he went back to Eretz Yisrael, she was Megayer, and then she married Boaz. But we know that she was at least 40 years old. It could have been a few more years. 40 plus years old. Chazal also tell us that the day after she married Boaz, Boaz died. Boaz is Evson. So they have now these very conveniently published charts that go through all the Seder of the Shoftim and the Malachim. And I went through the chart and found out that from the death of Evson to the death of David was 130 years. So that means she was in excess of 170 years old. By the way, Derech Agav, there's a very interesting insight into the death of Boaz. If you recall, the Sefer Rus, there was a dispute, and this dispute lingered for years and years, was still kind of hanging around in the time of David HaMelech, and even later. And it wasn't finally resolved until the time that the Beis HaMikdash was built. But there was a dispute whether or not Ruth had the right, Boaz had the right to marry Ruth. Because a Moavi, even a Ger Moavi, is not allowed to marry a regular Bas Yisrael. But the halach is Moavi velo Moavis. The story in Ruth is that when Ruth approached Boaz to marry her, he said, I will do it, but there is somebody who is ahead of me in the Goel process. He went to the Goel, who was only identified as Ploni Almoni, and the Goel originally said, yes, I'll do it. And he said, but it comes with a string attached. You have to marry Ruth. You can't just redeem the property. You have to marry Ruth. He says, I'm not going to do that. Why? Because he said, a Moavis is usher. So he got together the tens of Canaan, and they passed in the Moavis is mutter, and he married Ruth. And he died the next day. What do you think Ploni Almoni was saying? It's a good thing I didn't marry Ruth. See what happened. Chazal tell us, in actuality, Boaz had been destined to die before. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu kept him alive a few extra days so that he would have the opportunity to marry Ruth. And actually, Ruth became pregnant and gave birth to the son, who was the father of Obed, the father of Yishai, and from them came David, and from them in the future will come Mashiach. So he was really did not die as a punishment, so to speak, for the sin of marrying Ruth. He actually was kept alive several extra days in order to have that opportunity to do that mitzvah, which of course is instrumental in the entire future of the history of the world. So you could just imagine, it's a danger. People look at things and think they know why, what happened, and you see how off they were. And I'm reminded of a story that happened somewhat recently, a phenomenal story. There was a young man who was a member of one of the elite army units. I don't know which one, but they have several that are, you know, the real chashuv units. And they often get the most dangerous assignments. And he started getting interested in Yiddishkeit. And at a certain point, his increased observation of Torah and mitzvahs began to be a conflict in the his army obligations, and he left. He had already done his time. Usually these units are people who re-enlist and so on. So he didn't re-enlist. He resigned from the army. About 30 days later, he died. And a person, there was a Rav who was very much involved in being Makariv him, knew that he had to go be Menachem Avil to the parents, and he was expecting a question from the father. He says, look what happened. My son became frum. And he dies in 30 days, a young man. And how do you explain that? Why would God do such a thing? And he didn't know what to tell him. So he went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And he presented him the dilemma. And Rav Chaim Kanievsky told him, who says that he died young? Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him 30 extra days of life so that he could do tshuva and be zochet to Olam Haba. So he left and he says, it's a very nice answer, but how am I going to tell that to him? You know, a person who's a mamin, b'nei maminim, maybe we could hear such an answer. But I'm supposed to tell this non-from, you know, father, when his son just died, that he was going to die 30 days ago. You know, what's he supposed to do? He went to be Menachem Avon, and sure enough, the father asked him, he had nothing else to say. So in desperation, he said what Chaim Kanievsky said. The father jumped up and said, "Emes, emes, it's true." He looked at him, what do you mean? He says, the day after he resigned from the army, his unit went on a mission in Lebanon, and the helicopter that they were flying in crashed, and 11 people died in that helicopter crash. He says, most of his buddies in the army were killed then 30 days earlier. Had he not become firm, he would not have resigned from the army, chances are that he would have been on that helicopter and he may have taken passed away 30 days earlier. So, the bottom line is, it's, I don't know. I don't know if he did know. But I don't want to get involved in that. But the fact of the matter is that our view of reality is very, very limited. We don't see the whole picture. And therefore, things look different than the way they really are. And certainly, that's what it must have looked like to the opponents of Boaz. when he died the next day. Yeah, Mashiach, back to our story. So Ruth was zocheh to live at least 170 years, probably more. We don't know how much longer than this, but quite an old age. Why? So I couldn't find anybody who explicitly addresses this question. Why is it that Ruth was zocheh to live such a long age? I have a suspicion that at the time that Ruth came to Boaz and made this offer that said, you should marry me and redeem the fields, so Boaz said to her, Brucha at Lashem, it says, Biti hey tapta, Brucha Hashem le Biti, my daughter, you are blessed to Hashem, hey tapta chastecha achram in Arisha. Your last chesed was greater than your first chesed. And there's a chazal, a medrash, and that says that a person, I don't remember the exact wording, but said something to the effect that it's only mitoch the bracha of a tzaddik. I don't remember exactly, I don't want to misquote this, but it says it doesn't quite say beferish, that's why she lived long, but only from the bracha of a tzaddik is do you achieve fulfillment. It would seem to me that it's possible that this is the schus that caused her long life. What does it mean? The pasuk explains, and the medrash says that Ruth was actually a very beautiful woman, and she could have married anybody, or at least she should have a choice of people to marry. Boaz was an old man, but Boaz was the Goel Hadam, and there was an Indian, if it wasn't exactly Yibum, but something similar to it. And it said that she didn't chase after younger people. Actually, the Chazal say that a woman would rather marry a young husband who's poor than an old husband who's rich. Current events don't always bear that out. But I guess there are certain influences of society that have overcome that nature. Nevertheless, she probably could have found a young husband that was rich too. But she forego that, and in order to make him shame hames, which he wasn't really obligated to do, so that was her great chesed. And that chesed, perhaps combined with the bracha of Boaz, may have been the cause for her long life. I don't know. Why is it mentioned here? I don't know. But maybe while the pasuk is mentioning the covet that he gave to his mother, it mentions the covet that he gave to his great-great-grandmother, or whoever it was. All right. So now, Bathsheba has entered to such a warm welcome, and she's about to see how things change rather rapidly. So she goes and makes her request. Batomer, and she says, She'ela achas kitana anochi she'elas meimach. I have a small question to ask you. This is how mothers talk. I just have a little favor to ask you. Al toshev es panai. Don't turn me away. So the king said, Shali imi, ask me, my mother, kilo ashiv es panayach, I will not turn you away. Vatomer, let's take the two psukim together. Vatomer, and she said, Yutan es avishag ashunamis, let avishag ashunamis be given, la donio achicha tadino, your brother, the isha, as a wife. Now, it's not clear from the pasuk what exactly Ruth said. If we read the pasuk literally, she didn't say much of, I mean, not Ruth, Bathsheba, she didn't say much of anything. She just asked that Avishai should be given as a wife. And according to the Kli Yoker, that's exactly the pshat, because Adonio requested that don't tell someone that I asked, make it sound as if it came from you. Other Mefarshim learned that the pasuk is being Makatzer, that she went through Adonio's whole argument, why it's okay and there's no problem, but the pasuk doesn't repeat itself unless there's a message in the repetition. And here there was no message, so the pasuk is mekatzer. One thing that it does say is that she calls it kitana, and again, this is how Bathsheba looked at it. She didn't think it was any big deal, because she had accepted the argument of Adonio that it wasn't dangerous, and it doesn't hurt Shlomo in any way, and it makes peace with your brother Adonio, so what's the big deal? Doesn't cost you anything. So she really thought that it was a small thing. This is a sort of a little bit of a revelation of a concept in human nature which we're probably all familiar with, is that once you believe something yourself, it's hard to realize how other people are going to look at it. When you've accepted a certain argument, it doesn't appear to Bathsheba like that it will be a big deal for Shlomo. And you know, again, you know, Adon Yoel was very careful how he presented it to Bathsheba. But once you've accepted something, you sort of think that everyone's going to agree with you. So she really looked at it as if it's a She'ela Ketana. Even though she herself had probably originally realized that, look, there's an argument to be made that it's dangerous and you're not supposed to be Mishtamet B'Shavit Shel Melech. So Adon Yoel came up with his rationale and his explanation of who says it's a small thing. Let Shlomo judge that. But I've already accepted the argument, so it seems to me to be a small thing. So pasuk continues. We get to Shlomo's reaction. Vayan HaMelech Shlomo, and the king Shlomo answered. Vayomer Lima, he said to his mother, "V'lama at sho'elet es Avishag Hashunamis la'Adon Yahu? Why are you asking for Avishag Hashunamis for Adon Yahu? The Shali Lo Es Hamlucha. Why don't you just ask for him to be the king?" This is what we call sarcasm. Kihu Achi Hagadol. After all, he's my older brother. The Lo Ev Yasser Hakohen. And he has on his side Ev Yasser Hakohen Yo Ben Tsruya. So, and then he goes on to say that this is it. It's all over for Adon Yahu. So, first of all, clearly what Shlomo is saying is that Adon Yahu is doing this as a path to the throne, right? And the reality is that it is also it's Shavit Shel Melech. And as the Mefarshim point out, we mentioned this before, the mere fact that Avishag was still staying in the king's house and wasn't sent home to her family makes it clear that at least the king, you know, viewed this as Shavit Shel Melech, and so did Avishag and their family. We don't find any argument about that. And by the way, the Abarbanel adds an interesting point. Abarbanel adds that how do we know for sure what people thought? Who knows that people didn't even think that Avishag was a wife to David HaMelech. This is debated because clearly Lechara that he wasn't. It was known that she wasn't a wife because there was never any marriage. She might have been a Pelegesh, but according to the Halacha, a Pelegesh Aviv is not Usher Mishum Arayis, and therefore still the issue would only be Shavit Shel Melech. The question is whether that's going to make any real difference. But taking that aside, the first two arguments, other Mefarshim say as well, is that the Shavit Shel Melech, she stayed in the king's house, so this is a trick to get the throne. Now, let's analyze some of the expressions, what he was saying. Firstly, the Mefarshim point out, there's a redundancy here in the pasuk. It says, Vayan HaMelech Shlomo, Vayomer Le'imo. Why does it have this double lush, and certainly why does it have to say Le'imo? Obviously we know who he's talking to. At least say Vayana Melech Shlomo Vayomar, or just plain Vayana Melech Shlomo. So why do we have the phrase Vayomar Le'imo? So the suggestion is that Shlomo is saying, this is not the request of my mother. Now particularly if you learn, like the Kli Yakar, that she never identified that it was Adon Yahu. So he says that this request did not come from you. It came from Adon Yahu. I'm not fooled for a second. My mother would never ask such a thing because it's harmful to me. And I think there's a very important concept here, because the bottom line is she did ask. Now it's true, she only asked after Adon Yahu persuaded her. But if Adon Yahu could fool her into thinking that it's not harmful for Shlomo, why was Shlomo so sure that she couldn't make the mistake on her own? If she's capable of making that mistake, then maybe she did do it on her own. So how did Shlomo know that it's not so? And the answer is that there are certain things that a person could be fooled into believing but would never believe themselves. Something comes from your own soul, so to speak, There's a certain feeling, a certain attitude you have. A mother loves her child. She's just not going to think of something that could be potentially harmful. But if somebody else presents an argument, you could be persuaded. The fact that you are persuaded by somebody else does not necessarily mean that you would have thought of this yourself. And there's a very interesting application of this, I believe. There's a Gemara and a Medrash that talks about an incident. Also, we're getting into this Rus with the Moaviyah. We can't seem to get away with it from it. In the time of Shaul HaMelech, which was only not that long before this, and when David was beginning to attract attention, so Shaul asked about his Yichus. Was he a descendant of Peretz or a descendant of Zerach? Because they had a Kabbalah that the Malchus was going to come from Peretz. So Dori HaAdomi said, before you start asking about his Yichus, who he's a descendant from, you should first determine whether he's Kosher Jew. Because Boaz married a Moavis. So Shaul said, Moavi v'lo Moavis. Doeg, who is Doeg HaAdomi, said, if that's the case, why don't you say Adomi v'lo Adomis? But by Adomi, the halacha is a woman is also included in the prohibition. So said Shaul, because the pasuk gives a reason why Moav is excluded. It says, Al devar asher lo kidlu eschem balechem uvamoyim. When you came out of Egypt, they did not come out to greet you with bread and water. So it's a derech ha'ish lahakdim. A man is the derech to go out and greet you with bread and water, but women don't go out. Said Dalek ha'adomi, let the men go out to greet the men, and let the women go out to greet the women. Shaul was stumped. Now, the Gemara's version is a little different than the Medrash. In the Gemara, there was an intervention of Ezra Yisraeli, but in the Medrash version, Shaul himself went and asked Shmuel HaNavi this question. Why is it Moav and Moavis? Why do the men go out to greet the men and the women go out to greet the women? Shmuel didn't answer him. Shmuel said, he answered him, but he didn't answer the question. Shmuel said to him, it appears to me that you've been hanging out with Doeg HaAdomi. But you should know, Kach Mikublani, we have a Mesorah, Moavi v'lo Amoni v'lo Amonis, Moavi v'lo Moavis. That was his answer. Then the Gemara, the Medrash, in both versions is the same. They go on to say, but Lamaisa, what's the answer to Doeg's question? To which the Chazal say, called Kavuda Bas Melech Penima, that it's a violation to some extent of Tznius, even for the women to go out to greet the women. By the way, the Rosh Yeshiva has a shmuz on this Chazal, very interesting insight, that Shaul HaMelech is praised for his Tznius. This was a midah which he particularly excelled in, and a number of Chazal to that effect. And yet, he did not understand this very refined, lofty concept of tznius, that there's something epis lacking in tznius for the women to go out to greet the women. He didn't understand it. And the Chazal only figured it out because of there must be an answer to Doeg's question. So if Shaul HaMelech, who was such a Talmud Chacham and such a tznua, knew the midah of tznius thoroughly, still didn't understand what was wrong with it, do you really think that the Moavios understood what was wrong with it? These same Moavios who very shortly afterwards went out and tried to seduce Kal Yisrael into Znus, Baalpur, they were not particularly Tznuos. And they didn't go out to greet the women because they understood this lofty concept of Tznius that Shaul HaMelech didn't understand. It's ridiculous. It can't be. So what's Pshat? Pshat is HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates us with an internal compass. And whether we can make the argument or not, there's a hargasha, there's a feeling inside of tznius. And whenever even these women who were so far from it and violated tznius in the most gross ways, but there's something inside tugging at them, pulling them back. And therefore, it was the farthest thing from their minds. If you would have asked them, why didn't you go out to meet the women, they probably would have said, those dirty Jews, who wants to have anything to do with that? But inside, something was holding them back also. A little bit of the sneeze that they couldn't articulate, that they couldn't think of, they didn't even feel consciously, but it's there. And it's enough of an excuse that they're not fully guilty. Whereas the men who don't have that, we're held accountable. And therefore, our Kal v'chomer, we know that a Jewish person is, a Jewish neshama is endowed with many more capabilities. You imagine the sensitivity and the capabilities that's within each and every Jew, even if they strayed, and even if they've gone off the path. You can never give up, you know, on the Jewish neshama. But my point is that how was Shmuel HaNavi so sure that Shaul was hanging out with Doeg? If Shaul couldn't answer this question, then it was a good question. So maybe Shaul thought of the question himself. And I think it's the same answer. That Shmuel HaNavi knew the purity of Shaul HaMelech, and he knew his dedication and devotion to Torah and to Tznius and all these Midas Tavos. That such a pure neshama can't think of such a question. This is a question that attacks the Torah. He wouldn't think of it. Once somebody else raises the question, maybe he can't answer it. But Shmuel had enough of a recognition of the nature and the characteristic of Shaul that he knew he wouldn't say, at least not in the way that it was presented, as if to undermine the halacha. He says, it wouldn't happen. So the fact that you could be fooled by somebody else doesn't mean that you would think of it yourself. And it's the same idea, I think, here with Shlomo HaMelech. He says, yes, Bathsheba was fooled by Adoniyahu. That's possible. But I know for a fact, said Shlomo, that there's no way that Bathsheba would have thought of this idea on her own. Alright, so now he goes on to say, Shali as a Malucha, you might as well ask the kingdom, because this is really where he's headed. This is what would happen or potentially happen if I give him Avishag, because he has all these arguments. So the low of Yasser HaKohen Yovet Surya's Pashup Shad in the Pasuk would be that look how dangerous Adoniyahu is. If you give him an opening, he could easily claim the throne, because he has the argument that he's the older brother and he has the support of two such prominent leaders in Klal Yisrael. So therefore, because they support him in the first place, so therefore you got to watch out for Adoniyahu. Don't think this is such a simple thing. Give him Avishag, he could obtain the throne. But the low of Yasser HaKohen of Yoav ben Tzruya are written in present tense, as if right now they're supporting him. That's not necessarily a fair statement. They did support him back then, but that was before David HaMelech said, I want Shlomo to be the king. Why would Shlomo say it in present tense? And a number of Mefarshim, to this David and others, say that Shlomo figured out that it was their idea. He knew that Bathsheba didn't say it on her own, it came from Adoniyahu, or according to some of Hashem, she told him, but others he figured it out. But he also knew that Adoniyahu didn't think of it himself either. If you look in the Targum Yonasan says Hari Achi Kashishuni Halo Be'etzo Havu Hu Ve'ev Yasser Kahana Ve'yav Bar Tzruya. They were together in an Eitza. It's not 100% clear from the Targum if he's talking about the original Eitzah or the current Eitzah. But these Mefarshim are saying that's what the Pasuk means. That there was this Eitzah came from Yoav and Avyasar. How did Shlomo know that? And as we will see, he took action on that basis too. At least with Avyasar. Yoav, there could be other interpretations as well. So how did he know that? So I would suggest that the Pshat is that he knew Adoniyahu, he didn't think Adoniyahu was smart enough to figure this out. My father told me a story about a colleague of his, a rabbi, who I won't identify. We'll just call him Chaim Yankel. I hope there are no rabbis in Queens named Chaim Yankel. That he had a difficult shaila came up, it involved a potential aguna issue, and he called his rabbi to ask him the shayla, but his Rebbe wasn't available. And people were pressing him for an answer, so he called Rav Moshe Feinstein, explained the shayla to him. So on the phone, Rav Moshe started answering him, there's a shach and kosher mishpat based on this, and he gave him a whole piece of Torah and was matarin. The next day, his Rebbe called him back. So he decided he was going to have some funds. So he said, why did you, you know, I got a message, you called me yesterday, this I did, I had this and this a shaila. And I was thinking, you know, there's a shach in Choshen Mishpat, it says like this, and it went through Rav Moshe's whole Torah, and I thought maybe I could be matir on that basis. So his Rebbe paused for a moment and said, Chaim Yanko, das is nicht deine cup. He says, Chaim Yanko, this is not your head. So he knew that he didn't think of this on his own. So in a similar way, that's what Shlomo was saying. Das ist nicht deine Cup. This is a very clever trick, befitting of Yov and of Yasher. They're brilliant, profound people. They could have thought of such a thing. But Adoni Yahu, I know Adoni Yahu. This is out of his league. So, therefore, Shlomo held Evyasser and Yov also accountable and responsible for this potential plot. The pasuk continues. Vayishava Hamelech Shlomo Ba'Hashem Lemor. King Shlomo swore by Hashem saying, Kol Yaseh Li Elokim V'Kol Yosef, so may Hashem do to me, and so may He add. That's a lashon of Shvuah. Ki benafsho diber Adonio es hadavar hazeh, that Adonio has spoken these words with his life. At least that would appear to be the simple translation. V'ato, and now Chai Hashem, etc. We'll read the next pasuk in more detail later. But the ending is ki ayom yumas Adonio, that Adonio will die today. It would appear from a simple reading of the psukim that Shlomo made two shvuos. First, he swore, said, "Kol Yaseh Elokim Kol Yosef," that Menafsho Dibra Yaseh Rezeh, and then he said, "Chai Hashem," that he's going to die today. And the question is, why was it necessary to make two shvuos? Making a shvu is not a simple thing. In general, we don't recommend it altogether. Well, we find in Tanakh, we have David HaMelech made shvuas, Shlomo made shvuas, other people made shvuas. The purpose of making a shvuah is to be mezariz yourself. It's to make sure a person is going to carry through his commitment. I shouldn't get lazy. I shouldn't be talked out of it. I'm determined to do it. And in order to ensure that I will complete my task, a person accepts it as a shvuah. Fine? Okay? That's what Shlomo HaMelech is doing. But why does he have to have two shvuas? And even though in the first pasuk, he never said when Adonijah would die. He said he would die, and then the second pasuk he says today, but that still doesn't really answer the question. So why do you have to do that? Why not say right away that he'll die today? There is no reason to divide the shvuah, so to speak, in two. We did have a parallel earlier, if you remember, but it isn't quite a legitimate parallel. We find that when Bathsheba approached David and told him about Adonijah's rebellion, then Nosan Novi came in and backed her up, and David says he's going to make Shlomo the king. He also made a shvuah that I'm going to make Shlomo the king today. And the question there was asked that he had previously made a shvuah that Shlomo would be king. Why does he have to make another shvuah? One of the answers was, but this shvuah was to say I'm going to do it today. That's understandable, because the previous shvuah was made many years ago. It wasn't intended to be fulfilled right away. He couldn't have said 40, whatever it was, it wasn't 40 years ago, whatever years ago it was, 12 years ago, that Hayom Yimloch Shlomo, it's not true. I'm still going to be king for another 12 or 13 years. So he can only make a shvua that in the future Shlomo would be a king. And now there was a need to make a shvua that he'll be king today. But here, for the same money, he could have immediately said one shvua. I swear that today Adonijah will die. So the Kli Yakar, following his interpretation of this entire segment, in which Bathsheba never told Shlomo that she was sent by Adonijah, and it was Shlomo who figured it out. So he translates the first pasuk, Benafsho, not with his life, but Benafsho by himself. In other words, Adam Benafsho could sometimes mean a person by himself. In other words, I know that it was Adonijah himself who came with this request, not you, Bathsheba. And in the second pasuk he swears to kill him. I personally have difficulty with this explanation. I don't understand it, because if that's what the first shvuah was. Why was there a need for a shvuah? How could you swear to such a thing? And as he figured out through his inductive reasoning or deductive reasoning, whatever it may be, and he realized that Adoniel was the one who did it, and he was convinced of it. But why make an unnecessary shvuah? Why would you swear that it's true? It's enough to say, I know that it was him, and I swear that I'm going to kill him. The purpose of the shvuah is to be mizaris yourself, to drive yourself to action. Good. So make the shvuah, but you don't have to swear that what you're saying is true. If you believe it's true, take action. But the shvuah would seem to me to be unnecessary, and although in common conversation people do that. People swear that certain things are true because they want to convince, you know, other people. First of all, you wouldn't expect that of Shlomo HaMelech. Great people don't do that. And second of all, there was no need for him to convince anybody of anything because he's talking to Bathsheba, and Bathsheba knows. If Shlomo is right, Bathsheba knows that he's right. And if he's wrong, the shvuah is not going to convince her. So there's absolutely no function of a shvuah to say that I swear that it was Adoniel himself. You don't have to swear. You know that it was Adoniel himself. The Malbim explains, really, I believe, it's not Beferish, but reading between the lines, I believe that what the Malbim is learning is that there really were not two shvuahs. This was one extended shvuah, and the first pasuk is an introduction to the second pasuk. And he says as follows, you know what it means, ki benafsho diber Adoniyahu? He doesn't mean that he spoke with his life that I'm going to kill him, but he said that he risked his life in order to say this. He says that it is clear that making such a request, even though Bathsheba didn't realize it, he says, but Adoniyahu realized it, which is why Adoniyahu went to Bathsheba in the first place. It is clear that making such a request is risking his life. He says, I don't believe Adoniyahu would risk his life just to marry Avishas. Adoniyahu was a very powerful, prominent, prestigious person, and he could have found a shidduch. He wouldn't have done this just to find a wife. The reason why he's doing it is he wouldn't take such a risk unless he really was hoping to strike it big. He was hoping, he was gambling, but if he gets away with it, then he would take the throne. So that's what he's saying. Since he risked his life for this request, therefore I swear that I'm going to kill him, because I know that his intention really was to take the throne.